our masters of war. You build all the big guns, you build the big plane, and you build the big bomb. You hide behind walls, and you hide behind desks. I just want you to know see through your mask. You never done nothing but fear to destroy. Play with my world, like it's your little toy. You put a gun. You try to run for the when the bed bullets fly. How much do I know to talk out of turn? You may say that I'm young. They say that I'm unlearned, but that one thing I know, though I'm younger than you, then my Jesus will never forgive what you.
That's the Staple Singers with Bob Dylan's Masters of War. Of course, you remember the Staple Singers headed by Pops Staples on his guitar and his children, Mavis, Cleotha, Yvonne, and Purvis Staples, providing the vocals. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead. It is Wednesday, September 11. On this day, 12 years ago, as you know, 19 men said to be Al-Qaeda terrorists hijacked 4 fully fueled passenger planes en route to California from Boston, Newark, and Washington, D.C. airports and used them as bombs in coordinated attacks. American Airlines Flight 11, with 5 hijackers aboard, crashed into the World Trade Center's North Tower at 8:46 a.m., United Airlines Flight 175, also with 5 hijackers, hit the South Tower at 9:03. American Airlines Flight 77, with 5 hijackers on board, slammed into the Pentagon at 9:37 a.m. And United Airlines Flight 93, under the control of 4 hijackers and headed possibly for the Capitol or the White House, was diverted by passengers who put up a fight and instead crashed the plane near Shanksville, Pennsylvania, just outside of Pittsburgh at 10:03 a.m. Almost 3,000 people, including 343 firefighters and, of course, all 19 hijackers, died that day, and untold thousands of others affected. Of course, the entire nation and the world viewed this as a dramatic development. Although initially denying any involvement, Osama bin Laden in 2004 finally claimed responsibility, saying that the terror attacks were reprisals for U.S. support for Israel, its militarization in the Gulf region, and sanctions against Iraq. President Bush responded with a so-called war on terror, hunting down Al-Qaeda cells and bin Laden, and targeting Al-Qaeda shelter states, including Afghanistan and Iraq. Thus began the invasion of Iraq, followed by the invasion in Afghanistan. Well, you know how it goes. And here we are today, 12 years later, and President Bush's successor, President Obama, is poised for a Bush-style targeted intervention, unquote, in Syria, which since April 2011 has been mired in a messy civil war against strongman Bashar al-Assad's regime. So far today, the development is as follows. The president was not having much traction either within the global community, and certainly not at home, where Americans overwhelmingly do not approve of military action in Syria. This is not to say that they do not believe that the Assad regime has not used chemical weapons, but they believe just the same that there are mechanisms that should address that within the world community of nations, specifically through the United Nations, which the President of the United States initially had not placed very much faith in. But the most recent development is that under the aegis of President Vladimir Putin of Russia, a diplomatic solution is being sought. And the diplomatic solution, to which the Assad regime supposedly is looking kindly on, or certainly favorably on, is to surrender whatever is left or whatever exists in the chemical weapons arsenal in Syria to international controls. Last night, the president spoke to the nation and said that he would ask Congress, although he had been, he and his team had been pressing for a vote in Congress to give the green light to military action against Syria. The president said that that effort is going to be put slightly on hold for the meantime while diplomatic alternatives are being sought. But he said, nonetheless, that the military has been mobilized and ready to go should diplomatic efforts fail. So today's a good day to connect with each other, as we do, on open forum. But I'd like us to see whether we find any connection at all between the events of 12 years ago, the attack on the United States by Al-Qaeda, and today's crisis in Syria. Is there a connection, or are there connections? And if so, what might they be from your perspective? Of course, we could have a lot of discussion with a lot of experts, but we are experts too. And the expertise we have is that we certainly are able to analyze a situation with the knowledge that we have and we've gained, because this audience is an audience of readers, an audience of very smart people who pay attention to things and are current with things. So from your perspective, what, if any, do you see as the connective tissue between 9/11, 2001, and today? The number to call is 888-874-4888, 888-874-4888. I would ask, since we are very focused today, that we keep the discussion in that spirit. We remain focused on the question at hand so that we make the best use of your time and of your brain power, so we can get from you a concise analysis and what supports your point of view. Okay? 888-874-4888. Well, let's see who we have going with us today. We have Sarah. You are the first caller today.
Greetings, Utrecht.
Hello.
Well, Utrecht, on your topic that you have with 9/11 and today with what's going on in Syria, I'm going to say it like this. On September 11, they said, okay, these hijackers came out of Saudi Arabia, who allegedly did this, created the situation with 9/11. But the United States went into the wrong place. They went into Iraq.
Hello, Sarah?
Yes, ma'am.
We're having some really bad connection. Are you hearing me? Okay, are you hearing me? We can't hear you at all now, but when we were hearing you, it was very, very, a very bad connection. So perhaps you can call back and we will resume, pick up from where you just left off, okay? 888-874-4888. What, if any, connection do you see between the September 11th, the 9/11 attacks in the United States, and the situation now between the United States and Syria? Is there any connection that you see? And what makes you come to the conclusion, A, that there is a connection, or B, that there is no connection? Either way, I'd be interested in hearing your point of view. All right. Is Sarah back with us? I doubt it. I doubt she has been able to call us back that quickly. Well, you would notice, just to reference the speech last night, the president quite... Oh, there she is. All right, Sarah, you're back. Thank you.
Yes, ma'am. Is this any better?
Yes, it is.
Okay, I don't know what's going on here. But, okay, what I was saying with on 9/11 and the alleged hijackers who came out, the majority who came out of Saudi Arabia, and with the Syria connection, the United States went into the wrong country and destroyed it. They went into Iran, and as a result of what they did in Iran, the mess that was started, as they said, that was allegedly started by Saudi Arabia with Osama bin Laden and his al-Qaeda faction that came out of Afghanistan, they have a result dispersed throughout the region. And the United States has been using these same people, propping up these same so-called regimes that they have been putting their own people in power in order to think that they can control them. Now that we are seeing that these people have totally become unreliable, which of course they are, because whenever you pay people to do things, you can never determine how long they're going to stay.
Which people would you say, which people are you referring to who say have become unreliable?
These mercenaries, these so-called al-Qaeda factions, these people that they have coalesced and they've, you know, mishmash and pushed together in order that they call them these rebels, freedom fighters or whatever, because they have been moving around from Saudi Arabia to Yemen to Somalia. They're all over the place. Now they've just exploded all over the place.
What is the connection? You're not getting close to the connection, Sarah.
The connection,
the connection
that's going
between- I'm sorry?
The connection, Utrecht, is that some of these same people that they have alleged that came out that was a part of the bin Laden faction, that are part of this al-Qaeda, this big umbrella, that the name that they put, these are some of the same people that they have out here now that they put together into Syria that is destabilizing that area over there that is supposed, these rebels that are so-called fighting for freedom, trying to topple the al-Assad regime.
But who are the they?
What do you mean, rebels?
You said they have put them now in Syria.
When I say that they, okay, I'm sorry, let me clarify that they. The they part that I'm speaking of is the Western coalition power, the United States, Great Britain, France, Canada, as well as the Emirates, the Saudi Arabia, Qatar, and those the Arab League nations out here, as well as Turkey, who have coalesced and formed this unholy alliances with these people as a result in order to exercise whatever control they want to put up in that region. And the only thing that I'm saying is that, you know, your trees, which I find is very distasteful, and I've been listening to a lot of these shows today with the commemoration, and everyone is talking about, oh, the United States need to put up a good front because we cannot afford to have this thing come back in our backyard. You trees, people are only disgruntled with the foreign policy of the United States. It's not per se they have a problem with people who call themselves American or people from the United States. If the foreign policy is represented by the government in Washington, D.C., is what they have an issue with. Because they like to meddle into other people's business. They like to go up in there, try and dictate to them what it is that they need to do. And the fallout always end up being that is why it end up coming back with these blowbacks, because these people, they're minding their business. They're not trying to come up in the United States and blow up anything or do anything. But we are going over there where they are imposing policies on them because it's a means of controlling the resources that's on these land. That's all this is about, you trees. It's about control of the resources that they're implementing these draconian policies on these people, and people are not going to take it.
All right. Well, thank you so much. You got the conversation started today.
Thank you
very much. This just in on the email from VN, who says, the same behind the curtain forces are driving the U.S. to perform unspeakable acts upon, quote, the people, unquote, of the United States and the Middle East. So they, the rich, powerful war industry U.S. government, can do everything but be a government for the people, by the people. Thanks a lot for that. That was sent in on the leadstories@gmail.com. Harvey, you're next. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Utrice. Well, the connection, thanks for the show. The connection that I see is still oil. It's the commodities. It's the resources. I believe that if there were no oil in the area, and there is oil production in Syria as well as pipelines. Syria is very interconnected with all the oil countries there. And I believe that we wouldn't be there without these resources. And Iraq, I believe, was for oil as well. So I think that the most patriotic thing Americans can do at this time is cover their rooftops with solar panels and get star-powered, plug into the sun, because it seems that most of our wars, most of the killing, is around the acquisition of resources. And so we have to move to the ultimate resource so that we don't have to kill each other over oil. That's my take on it.
All right. Well, thank you for that.
Thank you.
888-874-4888. There are some very profound connections between the politics and the motivations of September 11th, the September 11th attacks, and today, I'm sure. We will get to some of them as we go along. Michael from New Jersey, thanks.
Hi, you, Trace.
Hello. What's your view?
Well, you know, I see it a little differently, but I think the connection is the narrative, the building of a narrative, a story, thought stories that are built up to gain support for certain foreign policy objectives, of which we know very little about. But what we know is that they need our support to do something, but they don't really tell us why. But the interesting thing is, there was a little bit of the boy who cried wolf in this time around versus as compared to 9/11. And in 9/11, I think people were kind of naive about the the propaganda machine and things that were working that we knew little about. And since then, we've become a little more sophisticated. I mean, at that time, they were able to put out there Condoleezza Rice and Dick Cheney and Judith Miller was on the front page of the New York Times day after day, and they built this incredible narrative, this story that built up, and then the imagery was dramatic imagery of the mushroom cloud and the. And then we saw Colin Powell, with all these graphic pictures. We didn't know what they were, but, since we figured that it was deadly, whatever he was showing us. So everybody just swallowed the whole thing hook, line, and sinker. After all, it was on the front page of the New York Times, and wherever we looked, we couldn't get a countervailing view of this of the narrative. The narrative was complete, wall to wall, and there were no seams, no holes, there was no doubt. I mean, a few people, but they were just, you know, at that point, they were building up quite a bit of patriotism and nationalism. And we, you know, we were injured personally, and so now, you know, when they tried to build the same narrative, you know, they gave the heavy lifting to the Secretary of State, and he did his best, but you know, we weren't, you know, the New York Times wasn't so quick to put all these kind of patriotic stories on there. They couldn't build up the narrative, you know, quickly enough, and we just didn't buy the story.
Mm-hmm.
I called my representatives here in New Jersey, and it looked like in the House that they were going to vote no, but unfortunately, my two senators were probably going to, you know, they were probably going to go along with whatever the president wanted. You know, I gave him my peace of mind, but it seems like even in the Senate, he wasn't going to get the 60 votes to preclude cloture there. So,
no, they were thinking that so far in the Senate they have only 40 votes that they could count on, and that's still iffy. In the 23 votes that they could count on. In the House, there are only 26 votes that so far they could count on. So this lack of credibility and fidelity in the administration is profound even within Congress. So this is very, very different.
Yeah, I think the connection holds, because I think 9/11 had a lot to do with that. Because even, you know, when I listened to your introduction this morning, I wish you would have put the word allegedly in front of your description of the events of 9/11, because it's still an issue with a lot of contradictions.
Yes, it is.
And the thing is, you know, it really, when you look at those things, and you know, every time 9/11 rolls around, for my own interest, I go on the internet and I look at anything new on 9/11, new news, and I'm always like, I always learn new contradictions that come up, that there's so many holes in that story. There's so many things that can't be explained, and it's I believe, you know, on one of the other shows, I think Gary's show, they said that there's you know, there's a tipping going on where I believe more people believe that, you know, that the 9/11 events can't be explained by the official story than believe it. So I think 9/11 had a lot to do with the fact that he couldn't get through his policy initiative this time. And also the fact that, you know, they tried to put out the story, the narrative about why we should do this, you know, without giving us a lot of facts. You know, all these facts, you can't know the facts. I mean, we know for sure that this was done by him, but then, you know, little by little, the Russians, little facts come out. Well, we really don't know if it's Assad himself or somebody in his organization, and the facts get a little more sketchy, but the story... So, you know, and the facts was sketchy in 9/11 too, but the story was so overwhelming, and if it was planned, if that's what happened, I don't know, but they, you know, the whole thing was put out there wall to wall, and anybody that contradicted that story was just off the wall, you know.
Yes.
Now I think if you bring up questions and doubts about 9/11, you're almost in the mainstream. So things have changed.
Certainly have. Things have changed indeed. Thank you so much, Michael.
You're welcome.
888-874-4888. I think, too, just to piggyback on what Michael just offered, the clear indication is that the United States, the credibility of the United States, it used to be awe-inspiring. It no longer is. And the world community of nations, and even here at home, the distance between the truth and what really, the truth as they tell it, and the truth as it is so huge that the citizens are tired, literally, of being lied to, essentially. They have no faith in government. Larry from Hawaii, you're on the air.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, I see, by the way, Utrice, I love your music.
Oh, thank you.
Every morning. Yeah, it's morning for me, by the way. I see two threads running through not only 9/11 and the Syrian, so-called Syrian imbroglio, but and they're also running through most of Western history. I see a religious oppression, and I see capitalistic oppression. And I see the capitalism, obviously mostly in the West. However, it obviously exists at some level in the Middle East. And I see religious oppression as a factor that has kept millions, if not billions, of people in the dark as to what the rest of the world is onto and has realized. After all, the Arab world, or the Muslim world, or the whatever Islamic world, introduced algebra and had a very definite, intriguing culture that went back from the beginning of, you know, from Mohammed's time. And it stopped at some point. The institution, the religious institution in the Middle East, didn't want information, apparently, from the rest of the world, because it obviously tore down and fragmented their hold on the population. And in the West, we've always had this, or at least since America, I shouldn't say America, I'm thinking out loud. In the West, since England and the British Empire evolved, it's always been a lust for more and more of everything. So these two cultures, one lusting after riches and wealth and resources, collide with the religious, the superstitious sort of backwards segment of the world's population, you get this reaction when some people like Osama bin Laden and his group realize that they're being taken advantage of. He was saying he wanted oil to be $100 a barrel. And he got it. All right, he got it. It went up, I think it was 140 at some point. When 9/11 happened, I think the price of oil was, what was it, about $20 to $30 a barrel. So anyway, it's basically a clash between one rapacious group of Westerners and one, what I see as a superstitious kind of ignorant group, on the other hand, in the Middle East. I don't know if I made my point or not. It's the first time I've ever called a radio show. And
welcome. I'm glad to... Glad to have you aboard. So this is the thread you see. Yeah. In what ways is it, for example, right now, with respect to Syria, these threads showing themselves?
Well, it's more of the same. I mean, you hear it's more of the same push from both sides. You hear from the Middle East that they don't want the Western influences, the Western powers, controlling their resources. I guess that's the underlying factor that they're they're, you know, bombing people and killing people about. I mean, from their point of view, if we can get more money for our population, we're a success. And I think they've done that. However, the people, as I get it, the people, and we don't get a lot of information regarding this, at least I don't. The people en masse aren't seeing any improvement in their lives, obviously, because they're revolting everywhere. I mean, they're, you know, these Arab Spring ideas are obviously a reaction to the individual oppression and misery that the citizens feel. And it's ongoing. As long as you have, you know, 90% or 95% of the people without the means to do anything except go to work every day and try to eke out an existence, you're going to have a lot of unhappy people. People just, they're not made to just go to some job and do whatever it is they do to try to get some food on the table for their wife and kids and their dogs and all the rest of it. So you have that, and then you have the capitalists worrying about these people coming and, you know, digging into their lifestyle. And you must admit, I don't think anybody would argue with the fact that America, really until the present day, probably has as good a standard of living as almost any place in the world, with the exception of probably Scandinavia and some Western European countries. So, I mean, we have a lot. We don't want them taking it from us. Or we, whoever we is, we don't want them taking it from us, and they don't want us taking it from them. So, like all war and all military action, it's based upon we better get them before they get us.
Mm.
And that's the way it goes. If people weren't afraid of what they might get or what might happen to them, there wouldn't be any war anymore. And you could say psychologically, if people weren't afraid of dying, there wouldn't be any war anymore, because people think, oh my God, they're going to come here and kill us. They're going to drop chemical weapons on us. They're going to drop bombs on us. We better get them first. And I think that's underneath it all. But it's so, all these things are very complicated and have layers upon layers. The connection, though, are big. The connections are big. It's capitalism versus religious institutions that have done everything they can to avoid contact with learning and anything that might fragment their absolute.
Well, thank you very much, Larry. And I'm delighted that this was your first call to Lead Stories. Hopefully it won't be your last. You'll be a regular.
Yeah, I love your Oliver Nelson. I listened to that album. There's an album on Rhapsody called The House That Train Built. And
yes.
It's got all the great jazz players. And whenever I hear your thing in the morning before I go to my swim, and I really it really inspires me. So then I go on when I come back, I listen all day to the, you know, different artists that you play. Thank you.
Thank you. Right. Thanks a lot. 888-874-4888. We'll take the short break to tell you about great programming right here at PRN.FM and come back to your calls right after this. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead, and that was Pop Staples with Masters of War, a great Bob Dylan standard. Bill from New Jersey, what connections do you see between the 9/11 attacks and where we are today with Syria?
Well, Eutrice, I see a few connections, but one reminds me of a video that I saw of General Wesley Clark, who was, I think, the NATO commander during the problems of Yugoslavia. But he was saying that he had two instances where he was checking in with the his associates, generals, I believe, in the Pentagon. One was 10 days after 9/11, and one of his associates said to him, "We had just we're getting ready to go in Afghanistan," and he said, "Well, we're going into were going into Iraq, and he said, "What? Well, were they part of it, part of 9/11?" He says, "It doesn't matter." And then he had a list of a total of 7 countries that they were going into, and he said it was top secret, so he didn't want to look at it. And then he recalled talking to Paul Wolfowitz, who was the Undersecretary of Defense during Bush Sr.'s Desert Storm, and he remembered talking to Wolfowitz about his how happy he was with the results of the Desert Storm, and he says, "Well, we didn't take out Saddam Hussein. We should have done that, but we realized that we could go in there with arms, and Russia wouldn't stop us, or at the time, Soviet Union wouldn't stop us." And he mentioned the same 7 countries. So there's this. Then I also recall hearing about neocons talking about the need for a Pearl Harbor type of event to get the country, the citizen of the of citizens of the country, to get behind any wars. And so you have all that put together, and it looks kind of conspicuous to me.
Do you think
and so? The current Syria thing was one of the 7 countries that was listed in this country list of 7 countries, as was Libya, Iran, Iraq, Syria, etc.
You know, there is an interesting thing about the United States as a warmongering nation, but having the luxury of never really having the enemies up close to them. You know, the wars are always fought in somebody else's country. They fight there, they create havoc there, and then people come home to an entirely different life, you know.
Right.
But when you talk to people, as I have, you know, you talk to anybody practically in Eastern Europe, they can tell you, they can recite readily the names of people in their own families who have died in a war of some sort. You know, Russia monuments to war all over the place. You get tired of seeing it in the Czech Republic. You get tired of seeing it in Eastern Europe. All this in Germany, the overwhelming presence of war in their lives. And I wondered, do you think Americans would feel differently if they had a similar experience of phases in their national life where, you know, one group or other invaded the country? You know, you open up your window in the morning to get some fresh air, and there are thousands of some foreign troops marching through your town.
I think that whether you're talking about modern America, or you're talking about
at any time in America in recent memory.
Yeah, I mean, whether you're talking about pre-World War II Germany, the people are manipulated by propaganda. We all are.
We all are manipulated by propaganda. So, in fact, one of the most important elements now in the war machine is the PSYOPs unit, or the Psychological Operations Unit, to persuade people that the violence directed at them is for their own good. But thank you. You got us another point to think about. Thank you very much, Bill. Thank you. Herbie from New Jersey. What's with New Jersey today? Is New Jersey's winning today? Hello, Herbie.
Thank you so much. This day to me is like a special day because I don't go back to 9/11. I go back to February 1993, February 26th, I think it was, a couple of days before my brother's birthday. And on February 26th, 1993, it was a truck bomb that exploded in the World Trade Center.
Right, in the basement garage.
Exactly. What I find memorable about that is the fact that when the guys were finally caught, they said it was some Islamic guys from New Jersey, and they took them to court in Lower Manhattan. Well, the trial was a secret trial, but I guess the transcripts were leaked. And what I found out was that the FBI had an informant in with these guys all the time. the FBI help these guys get the explosives, and the FBI let these explosives go off. The bomb was detonated, killing American citizens. Now, the informant, he was paid $1.5 million and left the country. But what this told me is that our agencies here in this country, in my country, will do anything they can to achieve their ends. I guess that wasn't horrific enough, and that's why 9/11 occurred. But if they allowed American citizens to die in 1993, then these gas attacks right now in Syria, they're the same bogus stuff as before. Not saying al-Assad is a good guy or that he didn't do it, but I'm saying that my trust now doesn't exist because I know that they'll sacrifice anyone to get their ends. The ends will justify the means for them.
But it's also scary that we don't know what those are either. We don't know what the ends are.
Well, the ends is domination, like everyone says. It's about resource. It's about the superiority of a few people over the whole world. You know, privatization means that you can do whatever you want with your private material, whatever you own. So if you own the local park, you can do whatever you want. You can control all that. If you have an electric company, you can do whatever you want. So the privatization around the world means the control of the world will be controlled by just a few people. And really, that's what this is all about. Power. They can do anything they want when they own it. And if Britain sells the post office, well, it's the same as Greece selling off their, you know, public assets here in this country. The post office itself is being forced to support the bonds, and then their jobs will go. Privatization will be control of the world by a few people, and that's really a positive for them in the long run. I believe that's one of their goals. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you for that. Sean from New York.
Hello.
Hello, Sean. You're on the air.
Hi, Eutrice. How you doing?
Hello. Fine, thank you. What are the connections that you see?
You know, I was going to piggyback on the question you asked, not the last caller, but the previous caller, when you were stating about you noticed that all the wars that we fought have been outside of the country. It's never been here. It's always been in another foreign land, someplace else where the havoc is being wrecked.
Mm-hmm.
And you asked the question, do you think that Americans' attitude with war would be different if it was fought here? And the answer to that question is yes. I believe the reason it is so easy for the American government to go to war or to concoct these type of schemes is because, again, we in this country don't know what it's like to have war right on our doorstep. As you stated, a lot of Europeans, you know, remember World War II very vividly, you know, and wars that have taken place after that very vividly. So they know what it's like to have bombs dropping on their homes. We have no clue about that. The worst that we've had happen is 9/11, and we didn't like that. Now, I think if we had have had actual bombings, I'm talking about with airplanes, killing massive amounts of people, I think America's attitude and our government's attitude would be a whole lot different than what it is now.
But that's the reason that the president speaks so confidently, because we are, just to remind you, in case you forgot, a superpower. We aren't just powerful. We are superpower.
You're right. We are a superpower, okay? And seeing that we are a superpower, nobody has, quote-unquote, defeated. And what I mean by defeated, I'm talking about invaded the superpower.
Mm-hmm.
We will continue to act in the way that we've been acting. This country is going to continue on its course until something catastrophic happens. And that's the only way I see our foreign policy, i.e., how we meddle in the foreign affairs of the Middle East and other countries, that's the only way I see it actually changing, is that something really catastrophic has to happen to wake people up. 9/11 wasn't enough. And, you know, like I said, all those other people you talk to, they know about it very vividly, what war feels like. We don't. And the closest it's come is 9/11. And until war is actually brought to these shores, it's not going to change. The superpower mentality of thinking is not going to change.
Well, thank you, Sean, for that sobering thought. Thanks so much for your call today.
No problem.
And Chris, you bring up the rear because you are the last call we'll take before we are signing off.
Hi, you, Trace.
Hello, Chris.
You mentioned earlier, and you hit something that is absolutely right. You hit the nail on the head when you said regarding the United States and all the wars were fought outside of this country. I've been saying that for years. I caught an interview yesterday, not knowing, I came across it, and I listened to it again, that Assad gave to Charlie Rose. I don't know if you have...
Yes, I saw it.
Okay. If you listened, I listened to it again when they showed it again, because I found it really very instructive and very interesting. First of all, a lot of what is used here is very indicative of a total disrespect for the intelligence of the country by our government. When they talk to us in this, you know, that they push a lot of this morality and the weapons of mass destruction and all of this stuff, it doesn't sell anymore. I listened to Assad speaking, and I'm not going to use all of these horrible dictator and all of these other epithets that the government and the people who choose to do this constantly load on our heads because it's such a crock. He was very prudent in his answers, and it struck me at one point when Charlie Rose, okay, so Charlie Rose is regarded as a respectable interviewer, et cetera, and fine, but the presumption of knowledge was so removed from the reality of other people, and it was so evident in his questions, because at one point, there were a couple of points, but at one point he asked him, he said, well, something to the effect of, you know, why don't you step down if... you know, people don't want you. And the response was that, you know, he said, you don't know what's going on. He said, what do you think the problem, he asked him, what do you think the problem is? And he said, well, he said, the government has made mistakes repeatedly and you have failed in many wars. And he said, you have to stop listening to your media and your think tanks. He said, because you don't live here. We do. You know, and I thought that was a really, I found him to be honest in his responses. But the presumption and the hubris that is beyond mythological proportions when you consider the position that the Americans take, when I say Americans, I mean the people who represent us and who push the buttons, that they have a right to go in somewhere and to tell people, we don't want you there anymore because you don't serve our financial interests. And the tie to 9/11, you know, the Project for a New American Century paper was written in the mid to late 90s. I heard of a foreign professor recently, and I thought he summarized it very well. He said, these plans to go into the Middle East are being implemented the way they were planned, and that is that they go into each country. They want to redraw the borders of the Middle East that America and some Western powers feel that were inappropriate. They don't serve them very well now. It has to do with the Russian control. The Russians supply a lot of natural gas to Europe, and the Americans want to control that. So there's so much going on. But as far as Syria is concerned, I think what they want to do, and I heard a hint of this yesterday in some of the discussions, and it's funny, you know, the Americans, because they have this British sort of deadpan thing. Sometimes they're so removed, but they come out with these deleterious conclusions, you know, that have nothing to do with their lives. And that is to cut up the country. Because you have the Kurds in the north of Syria, and you have other groups. And what they want to do to reduce the power of Syria, because it's in the way for their going on to Iran, I think, they want to cut up the country. They want to redraw the borders. And that's why I think, and Kerry actually sort of hinted at this, that they want to cut back the gains that the government, it's their country, has gained over these so-called rebels. And I would pose a question to you and everybody else. I would like to know what we think here that our government, how they would respond. How do you think this government would respond if the people in this country received arms, if you had militias, and started to fight with serious weapons against this government? You don't have to. I mean, I'd like to hear your answer, but I really want to know.
Well, my answer is very simple. I listened to Wolf Blitzer ask a question that, I mean, floored me, and it's his routine. The question was, so should we take him out? That summed up the entire business for me. Thanks so much, Chris, Sean, Herbie, Bill, Larry, Michael, Harvey, and Sarah for calling today. Tomorrow, a great program ahead, so let's meet again at 1 o'clock and stay tuned right here at PRN.FM. Thank you so much for the pleasure and privilege of your company today. One day.